Coming up, Tom Haverstraw and I discuss everything that happened during the NBA trade deadline and everything that didn't, because what a weird deadline it was with some of the deals we got. That's all coming up right now with me and Tom. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. The NBA trade deadline has passed. Joining me today, Tom Haverstraw. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm just still recovering from the news that Cam Thomas was waived. Anthony Davis is a wizard. This is a weird, weird deadline, man. You said it.
Yeah, it's one of the weirdest deadlines that I can ever remember, Tom. In part because of the expectations going in with some of the names, not just Giannis, but Ja Morant and Domantas Sabonis, and those guys don't get moved. The idea of, will somebody go for Michael Porter Jr. and offer 2-3 multiple first round draft picks? Will somebody go all out for Trey Murphy and see him as the final piece of their championship team? And none of these teams or players removed, and none of those teams that were at the top of the standings made those types of moves for those players. And it was the teams at the bottom of the standings with the third, the fifth, and the sixth worst records in the league, the Pacers getting Zubats and the Wizards getting AD and the Jazz getting Jaren Jackson Jr. They're the ones getting the biggest name players. It's just a weird kind of upside down deadline, considering the open state of the title contention window right now, that this is the way the deadline went. It's just weird to me. Very strange.
The trade deadline was all about not who's going to try to win the most games. It's who's going to try to lose the most games. That's what this deadline was all about. This was a race to the bottom. This was the teams that Milwaukee's of the world, Dallas, they move off of Anthony Davis for one of the saddest trade packages I can remember. People keep saying, oh, they got three first round picks. Those are second round picks. Those are second round picks, basically. I think you called it fake first, the one, the Golden State one. That's absolutely right, is that the race to the bottom here around Cooper Flagg for Dallas is very real. Kyrie Irving, who knows if he'll come back, but I don't think he'll come back this season. He may have played his last game as a Dallas Maverick. And then you look at the Indiana Pacers, the Washington Wizards, Utah. These teams are moving in the other direction, and I think it's really fascinating. This band of like the number four spot in the draft lottery to like number 10 is really going to be interesting. Memphis, Dallas, Milwaukee, Utah. It is going to be a crazy finish to the season. And I don't know, because like Jaren Jackson Jr. going to Utah, I still haven't been able to figure this out. Is there like a secret injury that he has that they're going to be able to table him for the rest of the year? Because they're going to have to get really creative with this injury report. How many times can one man get the flu in the months of February, March, and April? Like, this is a very strange trade deadline, because the worst teams in the NBA are either trying massively to get worse, or they're adding players to next season, but are they going to play him at all? And that's, I think, Kev, I think the NBA's got to figure this out, because we saw the scandal, the gambling scandals, and it's kind of ha-ha, Tankapalooza 2026. But when you introduce this little gap of insider information about who's are going to play, is Lauri Markkanen going to play, is Jaren Jackson Jr. going to play, is Anthony Davis going to play, all of these variables, it gets into a weird place. And I just think that they've got to figure out this tanking thing, because you're seeing a lot of teams right now that have very little incentive to win games, and it can make for some really awkward injury reports, and fans don't like it. I know for a fact that like here in Charlotte, it's a very hard to know who's going to be playing day in and day out when it came to LaMelo Ball and Brandon Miller, and suddenly they're playing and they're playing great. But when it comes to maximizing your position in the draft lottery, we're going to see some crazy, crazy things over the next couple months. That's what this trade deadline taught me.
100% agree with you there, Tom. And the biggest news of the deadline, of course, is that the Bucks decided to keep Giannis Antetokounmpo. And there was a number of teams connected to him, the Heat, the Warriors, the Wolves, most notably. There was noise about the Blazers inquiring, the Cavaliers inquiring. The Knicks, of course, have been connected, even though they're more quiet in this cycle. And what did the Bucks end up doing? Well, they traded Cole Anthony and Amir Coffey for Nick Richards and Nigel Hayes, and then they flipped Nick Richards to the Chicago Bulls, and they got Usman Jang, who had previously been traded there from Oklahoma City. That's what the Bucks did. That's what the Bucks ended up doing. They ended up keeping Giannis Antetokounmpo, and to your point, Tom, about teams sitting players, Wintour said today that there's a chance that they try to sit Giannis for the remainder of the season because they want to increase their odds of landing in the top four and getting either the second, the third, or fourth pick. They cannot get the number one pick because the Hawks have the rights to swap their pick, that pick, with the Pelicans first rounder if it ends up higher. So this is going to drag on until the summer, Tom. And who knows? Maybe this all ends up with Giannis playing his whole career with the Milwaukee Bucks, but here we are. He is still in Milwaukee.
It's super awkward, man. Super awkward what's happening with Giannis. Right before the game the other night, he's out there on the court working out, and the local reporters are saying, we've never seen him do this. Like, in his previous calf strain, he wasn't out on the floor doing these rigorous workouts to demonstrate to the masses who are watching that he's close or trying to play. And then later that day, or in the next 24 hours, he goes on this media blitz with local reporters saying how much he loves the city. But let's not talk about the Bucks. You know, let's not talk about the Bucks in the direction that they're going. I really want to win. I want to compete at the highest levels, but they might have other ideas or agendas. And I'm just sitting here being like, man, Giannis really wants to play, and he knows that it's going to be a really bad look if the Milwaukee front office, the medical staff, and the coaching staff deactivate him or essentially say, sit for the rest of the year. And I think he's laying down the pretext here for having an ugly battle here over the next couple months because he wants to play. And he told Eric Name, he's not a quitter, doesn't want to quit. Everybody around him wants him to sit games, and he doesn't want to sit. And I wonder if this is the Milwaukee Bucks are trying to be like, yo, we just saw Tyrese Halliburton tear his Achilles in the NBA Finals. We don't want the same thing to happen to you. And yes, Giannis Antetokounmpo is a fighter, that he wants to fight through these injuries and show that he's going to give it his all. But at what cost? Tyrese Halliburton did it in the NBA Finals. The stakes were NBA Finals, win an NBA championship in Game 7. The stakes literally do not get higher than that. Like, it's immortality for Tyrese Halliburton on the table. It's immortality for Kevin Durant in the NBA Finals in 2019 with his calf strain coming back, and he snapped his Achilles. This is not immortality for Giannis Antetokounmpo to be fighting on a 10 games under 500 team. So maybe he comes to his senses and says, look, I just need to rehab and get my calf strain right, get my wheels right, come back next season. But he is putting it out there very aggressively, loud and clear. He has no intention of sitting out the rest of the season. And the Milwaukee Bucks are pointing to, hey, we are not making moves to go all in right now for you. We did the Miles Turner trade, but man, this does not look like it's going to be headed for a very clean offseason for the Milwaukee Bucks and Giannis. I think it only gets uglier from here, Kev.
Well, if we look at the Eastern Conference standings right now, Tom, they're behind the Charlotte Hornets. They're behind the Chicago Bulls only by 3 games for the 10th spot in the play-in. And so there's a chance if Giannis comes back, they could win a little bit to get into the play-in. But ultimately, that's not for their best. For their best is having that first round draft pick in the lottery with a chance to end up in the top four with a second, third, or fourth pick, or even if you don't, ending up picking 7th or 8th or 9th and having that asset as a piece to either A, add a really good player or through the draft, or B, trading that pick for a good player that keeps Giannis and better builds around him. And that's why I think for the Bucks, it made sense to wait, because more doors open in the offseason for the Milwaukee Bucks. The door, it remains open that Giannis stays with Milwaukee and you build around him again and all this drama is in the rearview mirror. That is also a possibility with that draft pick. There's also the possibility of better offers being out there. That could happen. there's also the possibility that worse offers are out there this offseason and that Giannis is able to leverage his way to another team, a specific team, and you get a worse return back than what was out there right now as well. And so I think they raise the upside of what they can get for him, and of course they do lower the ceiling for what's possible as well with a return for Giannis. But I think that's a gamble worth taking if you're Milwaukee, especially given the state of the team right now with their current record at 20-29 in the lottery with a chance to get a top second, third, or fourth pick. So I like their decision to do that, Tom. And ultimately for everybody else that had an interest in him, Minnesota, Golden State, Miami, some of those teams might have a chance this offseason. Miami probably would. I don't know about Minnesota in the offseason, but Golden State more than anybody else. The fact they missed out on this, Tom, I think the Warriors are the biggest loser of the trade deadline. The fact that for weeks, the Warriors front office was signaling that they felt like there was a chance of getting Giannis. They put their best offer out there on the table for him. And then they end up trading Jonathan Kuminga for Kristaps Porzingis, who has pots and can't even play 20 minutes and might retire this offseason. That's what you end up getting to support Stephen Curry and Draymond Green after all of this. That's what you end up with. Just such a bummer. The Warriors are the biggest loser, in my opinion.
Hey, I can't disagree with that. But how about your Buddy Hield erasure? You know, like you just he goes to Atlanta. We didn't even mention it. So Buddy Hield, the whole Jimmy Butler bromance with Buddy Hield, it's over. It's done. And Jimmy Butler is slated for ACL surgery. And Stephen Curry's got to be looking at this like, really? Like, this is the roster that I'm going to go out and into the sunset with. And Draymond is already out here, you know, talking about it's just business if I get traded. I think it was a big whiff for the Golden State Warriors. And you can say, hey, look, what are they supposed to do? Jimmy Butler, really, the guy that they went all in for last year.
Do you say big win or did I mishear you?
No, big whiff. Big whiff. Big whiff.
Big whiff. Yeah. Big whiff. Okay, big whiff.
Woo. Yeah. I know. Yeah, Kristaps, he's going to put him over the edge. former champion Kristaps Porzingis going to put him over the edge. No, I don't think this is a win for Golden State. Definite whiff, swing and a miss on the whole Jimmy Butler thing. Because you can't acquire a 36-year-old Jimmy Butler and when he gets injured say, hey, woe is us. Like, who could have seen that coming? When you trade for a 36-year-old Jimmy Butler, you know the kind of miles on those tires, and you know at that age, with the Tom Thibodeau Chicago Bulls miles and all the stuff in Miami, like the deep playoff runs in Miami, that there's a chance that just like every other guy in the NBA, father time comes for him too. And so there has to be a plan B, in which case this is a big whiff for the Golden State Warriors. And I feel bad for Stephen Curry that he's looking at this where he is still at the top of his game. How crazy is it, Kev, that we're sitting here that Stephen Curry is still in his prime? You can't even say that he's out of his prime. He's still among the best players in the league at his position, and they don't have a supporting cast that can support him on this championship chase. And so I think this is a tough pill to swallow if you're Stephen Curry. And looking at the landscape of the Western Conference, I feel like they could have made some moves here and they didn't. And they can say that, hey, maybe the Jimmy Butler $57 million expiring contract, which you can't call it now, but maybe this summer you can go to market and say, hey, who's got some long-term money they want to get off of? We have a $57 million expiring contract here in Jimmy Butler, and we'll attach our picks and we can go big game hunting again. I just don't know if that's going to do it enough with Giannis Antetokounmpo. And it signaled to me last night when they traded for Kristaps Porzingis that they are not in the Giannis Antetokounmpo business anymore, because you could have kept Jonathan Kuminga in this offseason. And they were like, yep, we're cutting bait. We're done with Jonathan Kuminga. We're going to bring back Kristaps Porzingis and maybe he'll play for us, maybe not. But we are out of the Giannis game. And that's what it signaled to me.
The Lakers have failed Stephen Curry, Tom. The Lakers have failed. That's what it is. The last 4 years, they've been one of the biggest losers in the entire league. Obviously, they win that championship in 2020. That's awesome. They get the fourth ring for this core, and it's amazing they got that. But ever since then, it's just been whiff after whiff. in the draft. They whiffed on their young guys, their opportunities. They whiff on every trade opportunity, bypassing chances to get guys to bolster their odds of going for it. I mean, the fact is that they traded Jonathan Kuminga for a guy who barely plays, who might retire this offseason, who has a condition that there's nothing you can do to manage it in pots. It comes and goes at its will. And you don't know if you're going to wake up one day and be able to play or not. It's unfortunate. I feel bad for Porzingis. It sucks. He's a great player. If he's healthy, he's an awesome fit. But he's not healthy. And that's what you end up for Jonathan Kuminga, this crown jewel asset that the Lacob family valued so highly for years and that wanted to hang on to with this two-timeline approach after making a mistake, taking him over Franz Wagner, and you bypass chances to go for a Lauri Markkanen type because you didn't want to give him up. You bypass the opportunity Siakam. To give up him and Siakam, exactly, and multiple other draft picks. You could have made a strong offer for Michael Porter Jr. or Trey Murphy if you wanted to, but they didn't. They didn't. And they just get rid of him for Porzingis and what feels more like just a salary dump more than anything else. And another year wasted of Stephen Curry still playing in the extended prime of his career. And that sucks. It sucks for the Warriors fans. It sucks for Stephen Curry. It's disappointing the fact that the Warriors are going to just be a play-in out this year. And that's it, Tom. It's crazy that that's the way this has gone for the Warriors. And really, it's on the Lakers for failing to build around Stephen Curry in these last 4 years. And for Kuminga now, Tom, he lands in Atlanta, and how funny would it be if he ends up a star? Can you imagine that turn if that happens? If that's the next page of this story? If Lacob was like, I told you so! I knew it! Jonathan Kuminga is a star now!
Can you imagine? I mean, I don't see it, but it could happen. They got Reese Hoshea on the wing. They've got Jalen Johnson on the wing. It'll be tough for Kuminga to break through, but that would be a crazy development. I will say this. What do you think John Horst is looking for? Like, what was the asset that maybe he was just playing, playing with everybody and essentially saying, like, I'm not totally serious about trading Giannis. I'm waiting for one of these teams to put in that asset, that player, or that pick. Because obviously, if they're listening to offers and making counter offers, as that has been widely reported, clearly there was something that Horst and the front office were looking for. And Atlanta, clearly, we didn't hear anything about Atlanta engaging on them by sending a Wisconsin guy and Jalen Johnson to a trade to go get Giannis Antetokounmpo, that what Rich Paul threw out there on his podcast. You didn't hear anything about the first round pick that they have, the best, the most favorable of New Orleans and Milwaukee going to the back to Milwaukee. You didn't hear that. So I'm wondering, you know, it, from your perspective, Kev, what do you think was like the thing that Horst was looking for? Because clearly the Warriors didn't have it. Clearly the Knicks didn't have it. And the Minnesota Timberwolves didn't have it. But what do you think was out there potentially that they'd be like, all right, fine, we'll trade Giannis Antetokounmpo?
I think it was from Giannis himself, Tom. I think the Bucks were waiting for Giannis to be like, tapping into his inner Jimmy Butler and saying, I want out. I want out. I actually want to leave. And instead, he's continued saying, I want to be here. That's my ideal future, is staying in Milwaukee. And so I think that's really what it was. I think the Warriors' offer was pretty good. 4 first-round draft picks, a swap, Kuminga and Pods. That's a pretty good offer. And maybe they could have flipped Draymond Green for 1 first to a team. You don't know. That's possible that could have been out there for them. And so it could have turned into 5 first-round draft picks. So I think it's a pretty good offer, but not enough for me to take it today unless Giannis is willing to say, I want out. And he just posted on Instagram, Leonardo DiCaprio and Wolf of Wall Street saying, I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving, with the caption, legends don't chase, they attract. That's what Giannis posted on Instagram. And so, you know, sometimes you go through a dip in your relationship and you get back together and you're back for the rest of your life. I've got some friends like that that breakups in high school and they ended up getting married. Who knows? Maybe that's what this is, Tom. They're going to be together forever.
Let me ask you this. Who's the player that they could trade for if they get a top five pick? Let's say they get a top five pick. Does John Horst take Caleb Wilson? Does he take Darren Peterson, AJ DeBonsa, Cam Boozer? Does he take one of those guys? Or does he say, hey, I'm floating this pick onto the market because we're going to try to go and make Giannis happy. We got Miles Turner. We got Giannis. Let's go to market and see what we can get for this top five pick. I mean, what on the board would make them feel like if you're looking at it on a chessboard, do you keep that pick or do you say, hey, I see your Instagram post, Giannis. I'm going to go out and get this guy because we're not going to build right away with the Cam Boozer with a DeBonsa. We're going to actually go for it. Like, who is the guy on the marketplace that might be able to be gotten? I don't think Anthony Edwards, the Minnesota Timberwolves, would move off of Anthony Edwards. I don't think you're seeing
no chance.
What would be the best player that they could get if they were to float that top five pick, because that's where it's headed right now. The Milwaukee Bucks, if Giannis doesn't come back this season and if he takes his time coming back, the Milwaukee Bucks could end up with a top five pick, in which case, do they select or do they trade away from that pick? And I got to say, New York has got to be thrilled right now. Jose Alvarado, not to divert this conversation, that's going to be amazing. Like, I can feel it. I'm in New York right now. I can feel the ground rumbling with people getting on their feet and cheering for Jose Alvarado, New York's own Jose Alvarado. But I also think that New York Knicks fans are thrilled right now because Giannis is still available. And they get their package can get better in this offseason. And we aren't that far away from how this roller coaster of emotions with Giannis is, that he might just come out and say it outright. I want to go to the Knicks. That's where I want to go. How can you get me there? That's my trade demand. And we are not too far away from that. He was not moved at the deadline, so it's still a possibility. And I just don't know if John Horst is going to be willing to do that.
I would say Donovan Mitchell, if the Cavs flame out, lose in the first round. Mitchell and Harden hate each other. Maybe Mitchell. Other than that, like for like top 25-ish players, I'm having a hard time thinking of anybody. Kawhi Leonard, you're not giving up that pick for old man Kawhi. Stephen Curry, I think you'd have to give a lot more for the Warriors to be willing to move off Stephen. Would he even want to go to Milwaukee? Probably not. Lauri Markkanen, maybe, but the Jazz just added Jaren Jackson Jr. and conceivably they're trying to win next season. So I don't think there's a lot out there. I think ultimately maybe the Bucks would have their own kind of two timeline approach, bringing in a young guy and trying to win with that guy. But ultimately, what a relationship between Giannis and the Milwaukee Bucks. Then you mentioned the Knicks, Tom, how happy they must be that Giannis is still on the board. They had not a busy trade deadline, but they ended up trading Gershon Yabusele, who was an absolute bust. 400 pounds he got up to this off. I'm just kidding. It's not 400 pounds, but he definitely was not putting in the effort that you would have hoped for after it was required. They traded him for Dalen Terry, and then they flipped Terry with 2 second round draft picks to the Pelicans, and they get Puerto Rican kid in New York City, Jose Alvarado. Awesome for the Knicks to get Alvarado, and a good fit. Good timing to get him to Deuce McBride is going to be out for a little bit with Alvarado bringing energy now off this bench, Tom.
Yeah, it's a great move, and I think the crowd favorite. I'd be surprised if they're not selling Alvarado jerseys right now in the Knicks shop. Like, I got to imagine those things would be flying off the shelf. So incredible, incredible move from them. And I don't think that when you're looking at the rest of the Eastern Conference, you feel like the Knicks are any worse than they were going into the deadline, despite striking out on Giannis Antetokounmpo. He's still on the board. And Alvarado's going to be needed because Deuce McBride reportedly is out for a significant time with a core muscle injury. And you get a defensive menace in Jose Alvarado. Grand Theft Alvarado fills a lot of the stuff that Deuce does defensively. He's not as big and strong as Deuce is. But when you look at the skill set of being a backup point guard behind Jalen Brunson, who's going to be an absolute pest against opposing point guards, I think it was a great move. You know, a lot of times you have these New Orleans Pelicans type teams that have veteran players who are misfits on the roster, rebuilding roster, and teams are going to pilfer that and try to go get a Jose Alvarado. And I can't tell you how excited I am to see the chance, to see the fans going nuts for Jose Alvarado, because he fits what they need now with Deuce McBride out. And I think that's a big injury in the Eastern Conference, and Alvarado's going to help in a big way. And they didn't give up much to go get him. Like you said, Gershon Yabusele, and then two, you know, by way of Terry, you have to put in 2 second-round picks to get a really good rotation player and one of the better point guard defenders in the league who can run your offense. And I think people are going to love this dude. He might be like Jalen Brunson's the king of New York, right? But I would say Jose Alvarado is going to be like the fan favorite there for the New York Knicks, much more so than Yabusele.
Yeah, I think that's spot on there. And good for the Knicks to get him. It'll be a fun addition there. And we'll be right back after this break. The biggest trade, though, that we had of the whole deadline, and definitely in the Eastern Conference, was between the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Los Angeles Clippers. Darius Garland and a second-round pick for James Harden. Do you want to talk about the Clippers side of this first, Tom, or the Cavaliers side of this Clippers-Cavs blockbuster?
Yeah, let's talk Clippers real quick, because you're looking at Zubats out, Darius Garland in, James Harden out, and you're looking at Kawhi Leonard staying. According to the reports, I haven't seen it, that Kawhi Leonard's been moved. I think it's a bad idea to move off of Kawhi Leonard in the middle of an aspiration investigation. But they kept their books remarkably clean past 2027 until this deadline, where James Harden goes out and they add salary past 2027 with Darius Garland. And then you look at Zubats moving on after an elite defensive campaign last year, where he was top six in defensive player of the year, one of the best defenders. And a lot of people, including myself, were considering him to be the defensive player of the year last year. I would have given it to Amen Thompson, but I think Zoo had a really good case last year. And the question for me is whether the Clippers have some intel to believe that that was really a blip, that was just a once in a career year, that wasn't going to be a sustainable run for Ivica Zubac. And he was down this year, not the same level of player defensively and scoring wise. He was just out of his mind last year. And so if you're the Los Angeles Clippers and you're saying, hey, can we get that guy considerably for the next couple years to maintain that level? They moved off of him with what could be a really good pick in this Indiana Pacers top four protected and top 10 to 30 protected. So if it goes to the Clippers this year, the only way that happens if it's from 5 through 9. And that, to me, Clippers did some nice business here at the deadline, getting Darius Garland, getting younger. This was the oldest roster in the NBA by far, and pretty much the oldest roster in NBA history. They're done with the Chris Paul thing. They move off of James Harden, and they build for the future alongside Kawhi Leonard. And the question is, just like with every other team in the league right now, it seems like, how much is Kawhi Leonard going to play the rest of the year if he's got an injured Darius Garland, no Zubats, and a bunch of kids around him? It's a really interesting question for the Clippers, and a total reversal of what we saw a couple weeks ago, a stunner that they were 16-3 not 2 weeks ago, and they were like the hottest team in the NBA, and they completely blow it up here around Kawhi Leonard.
Clippers have won 16 out of 20, and then this all happens. And ultimately, it's a future-focused deal, Tom. As you said, they get Darius Garland and Benedict Mathurin. It's not the worst young backcourt to build around moving forward with Garland and Mathurin. It has its flaws, but I think Mathurin is still an upside player with the what he's shown in Indiana over the years. And Garland, as much as I've always been a Darius Garland skeptic, he's a small guard. He's not durable. There's a reason why Cleveland wanted to move off of him and upgrade to James Harden, but he's still talented, and he's only 26 years old. He's 10 years younger than James Harden. And so for the Clippers get a lot younger here with this. And I think part of the reason with Zubats, Tom, is you're right. Like Zubats, it might have been a blip last year. A, the return was awesome. Sometimes the return is just so good, you got to say yes. The fact is that they got a 2029 unprotected and then a 2031 unprotected if they don't get it 5 to 9 this year. So that pick that's protected in this year's draft class, 1 to 4 and then 10 to 30, if it doesn't land in the 5 to 9 range, it'll be 2031 unprotected. Two unprotected picks for Zubats. When you have John Collins, Brook Lopez is playing a lot better, and then Yonick Niedenheiser, he's playing very, very well for them as a rookie. If like Conan continues developing, you have an upside guy at center. Zubats, the plotting style, maybe you want to play faster and up and down in the pick and roll with Yonick and Garland and Yonick and Mathurin, and maybe that's the way they're going to build moving forward. And they do keep Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi is in a situation now where he's got a bunch of young guys around him. They didn't want to pay James Harden. That's in part why Harden asked out and why he was sitting out despite the success lately. He's worried about his contract. They didn't want to pay James Harden. Are they going to want to pay Kawhi Leonard? Maybe Kawhi ends up an off-season trade, Tom. But we'll see what happens there with the Clippers moving forward this off-season. That's a conversation for another day. But I think ultimately one of the other things here, Tom, with relation to the Clippers, they get worse in this scenario. So they're worse right now with Garland out and Zubats gone. Even though they're currently in the play-in, they're only a half game up on your Portland Trailblazers. They're 2.5 games separated from the Memphis Grizzlies. The Grizzlies are tanking hard. I don't think they're going to catch them necessarily, but their chances of making it to the playoffs are diminished. And so OKC is a winner here. Like OKC, there's a higher percent chance that they get that Clippers pick in the lottery. There's a higher percent chance OKC, the Jazz got better. That pick is top 8 protected. It could fall out of the top 8. They get Jared McCain. The Clippers and then the Thunder in this situation are kind of a winner as a byproduct of the Clippers' choices, the Jazz choices, and getting Jared McCain in the Western Conference right now.
I wonder, did the Clippers punt because James Harden just decided, look, I want to get a big contract, and everything, all the dominoes fell? I wonder if the domino was even the aspiration thing. I wonder if the Clippers decided, look, there's a potential that this goes the wrong way. We might seem that we're innocent. We've put it out there that we're innocent. No wrongdoing. Steve Ballmer's been out there on ESPN saying we're innocent. We didn't do anything wrong here. This wasn't cap circumvention. But I wonder if this is kind of a hedge, is to say, look, if we lose Kawhi Leonard, or we get the hammer dropped on us, even if we don't agree with the suspension, I wonder if they just looked at the room and said, this isn't going to go our way, and we can't risk that we lose Kawhi Leonard and we have all these punishments down the pike. They might say, like, we're innocent, we believe we're innocent, but still the league office might not see it that way, and they decide to hedge their bets and build for the future, because right now the team was not, well, I should say a week ago, the team was not built for the future. It was the oldest roster in the NBA, and they were looking like they were going to be in a high-end playoff team with the way that they were getting. I don't think anyone wanted to play the Clippers in the first round. The Thunder or Denver or Minnesota, I don't think they wanted to play the Clippers in the first round with the way that they were playing. And now they're punting. And it is such a crazy development in the NBA that the Clippers 2 weeks ago were the hottest team in the league, and then they decide to punt the season. And I wonder if there's any sort of nervousness around the aspiration investigation that would cause them to say, We got to blow this thing up. We got to go and decide to reset and reverse course. And they reach out to the Cavs. They engage on a trade with James Harden. And like, I think this is a good deal for the Cavs. Like, I think they actually improve their title odds getting out of the Eastern Conference with James Harden. But I feel like this coming out of nowhere, it is a strange pivot from the LA Clippers ahead of their All-Star weekend at the Intuit Dome. And James Harden just moves on. They move off of Zubats with a deal that is like, we want to build for the future in trying to get that 2026 first round pick from the Pacers. And it just seems like they completely did a 180 here. And I don't have any inside information on this. I'm not hearing that the aspiration deal is going one way, but it just seems to me that this is a very curious move for the LA Clippers to pivot this quickly after being one of the best teams in the last week, in the last month of the season.
Yeah. For Clippers fans, I just feel bad, Tom. I mean, I feel bad. It's always something with the Clippers. It's always something. And then, you know, the year begins and the whole aspiration thing, and then the team sucks. And everybody's like, oh, well, KC's going to get the number one pick. They're going to get DiBanza or Peterson or Boozer. Oh, no. And then they start winning and they make a run and they're in the play-in and the playoffs are ahead. And then this all happens. This all happens. James Harden does it again. He asks for another trade, Tom. I mean, this ranks up there, this Harden trade demand. Asking out after your team won 16 out of 20 games, this ranks up there. It's behind the fat suit, that's for sure. It's behind him putting on the fat suit to push his way out of Houston. It's definitely behind when he left Philadelphia and he said on his tour in China, speaking to a bunch of Chinese students who probably couldn't understand a word he's saying, Daryl Morey is a liar. I will never play for him. Let me repeat myself. Daryl Morey is a liar. And he had it filmed and posted. And it's behind those two trade demands. That's for sure. It ranks third.
What are you talking about? It's not a trade demand, Kev. You never asked that. What are you talking about? They just wanted to get value for James Harden after winning a month, like basically being the best team in the NBA for a month. I'm with you, man. The NBA never stops, man. The drama never stops. And the Cavs, I think they upgraded here. Darius Garland might have, you know, great shooting ability, get downhill, really fun score when he's got it going, but it was a real question mark whether he was going to even be able to play in the postseason with all these foot issues. And it's not like he's a 7-footer and that even if he's limping around, he's going to be able to help you. He's 6 feet tall. And they were already having questions of that backcourt and how post-playoff viability those two guys are together in the backcourt. And they've got the Donovan Mitchell situation where Jake Fisher and Mark Stein were reporting an executive told them that the Cleveland Cavaliers secretly have the same situation with Giannis from Milwaukee, the same situation with Donovan Mitchell, that they're dealing with a guy who could leave in 2 years and they don't want to have to be left at the altar and say, we didn't get Donovan Mitchell for anything and he is asking out. And so they had to make a move. And so the James Harden thing, you can laugh all you want about the postseason struggles for James Harden. He's only been to the NBA Finals one time, the Conference Finals four times, and has flamed out in a hilarious fashion in past years, where he's got a lot of, in game sevens, a lot of concert dates on his ledger. I do think that you have James Harden is making them a better chance of coming out of the East. When the door is open with Detroit, did not make it out of the first round last year. You can laugh all you want about the Cleveland Cavaliers underperforming, but with Evan Mobley and Jared Allen and James Harden, and with Keon Ellis and Donovan Mitchell, I think that is a much better core than where they were a week ago. And that's not nothing. I mean, we could be talking a couple months from now that the Cavaliers and James Harden are in the NBA Finals. I know that's crazy to say right now because of how much we've laughed about James Harden over the years.
It's not crazy at all.
You look at the rest of the East. Who are they afraid of?
They got better. They undeniably got better. I mean, I thought it was a masterful deadline by Cleveland. They saved money, they cut money, and they got better. That's a hard thing to do, saving money and getting better. They upgrade from Garland to Harden. That's undeniable. Garland's a good player, but Harden's durable, a better playmaker, a better creator. He's going to make Evan Mobley and Jared Allen even better, creating easy shots for them at the rim, outside. He's got shooters around him. Easier shots are going to be made for Donovan Mitchell. And Everybody talks about and jokes about, and understandably so, all the playoff choke jobs in Harden's career. He had plenty of them in his prime years in Houston. He had them in OKC even early in his career. He had him with last year with the Clippers in game seven. He had 7 points against the Nuggets in game seven, but he had 28 points in game six to push it to a game seven. He had clutch shots in game one down the stretch in the fourth quarter and in overtime in a really competitive game against Denver to keep the Clippers in that game. So he's had great moments in the postseason in his prime and in recent years in the twilight prime of his career. He's an upgrade over Garland. He's been there. And I think for Mitchell and him in that backcourt together, this is going to be beneficial too for Harden, because Harden was averaging 25 points per game for the Clippers. He doesn't have to score at that volume with Cleveland now because of Mitchell, because of Mobley, considering that supporting cast. And Harden, he's also shown the willingness in his career to do that. He did it in Brooklyn. He took a back seat. He took a back seat in Philadelphia. He did it early on with the Clippers until he had a score more. And so this is not some guarantee to work for Cleveland, but they add him. That's an upgrade. I love the Keon Ellis addition for them. They get some bench creation with Dennis Schroeder as well. I like what Cleveland did. I think they're one of the biggest winners of the entire trade deadline. And I like the boldness of this choice as well, Tom, for Cleveland to go there. We do have some breaking news. The Milwaukee Bucks account just posted, just in, conversations have started about Shams Charania's future and discussing whether the ESPN senior NBA insider's best fit is staying on Giannis's all-star celebrity team or elsewhere, with a post of Doc Rivers talking about how it is on the table and that they are listening to trade conversations for Shams Charania. So the Bucks just put that out. They're feeling good today, Tom.
Wow. They are here for this. The social media team might be the biggest winner of the deadline. That is spicy. Very spicy by the Bucks front office. And you know that people are going to be retweeting that if Giannis makes a trade demand this summer. Just like, man, they are out here with that tweet going after Shams like that. And it's all jokes. It's all jokes, right? But it's just like, man, Bucks are, for a team that is 20-29, they're getting their jokes off right now. With their best player in a calf injury, so they are getting their jokes off, which, man, this could go one or two ways, right, with this tweet and the yawning emoji from earlier. I hope for their sake that Giannis doesn't come out with a trade demand this summer. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, I know. Well, they definitely feeling good today, but we'll see how it plays out for them over the course of time. There was a trend in this year's deadline that we mentioned at the top, with the third, fifth, and sixth worst records in the NBA adding former All-Stars. Zubats goes to the Indiana Pacers with the third worst record. Anthony Davis goes to the Washington Wizards with the fifth worst record, and Jaren Jackson Jr. goes to the Utah Jazz with the sixth worst record. What do you think for these teams, Tom, is the overall approach with them midseason with a loaded draft class deciding now is our time to make an addition? What's going on through the mind of these teams right now?
Ping pong balls. That's it. For people out there who want to say that this is an 82-game season and that we shouldn't shorten the season, well, it's already shortened. We're seeing it all around the league. These guys are only playing 58 games anyway, so make it a 58-game season. Because when you're looking at Zubats going to Indiana, when you're looking at Jaren Jackson Jr. going to Utah, when you're looking at Anthony Davis and Trae Young going to Washington, do any of us really think that they're going to be playing the rest of the year? Or how much are these guys going to be playing the rest of the year? We just talked all offseason about how Atlanta is going to make this big push, underrated this, the biggest winner of the offseason, getting Kristaps Porzingis, adding to Trae Young, Nickeil Alexander-Walker, the big breakout season. And that was right, actually. The Atlanta Hawks and Kristaps Porzingis played three games together with Trae Young. Trae Young and Kristaps Porzingis played 3 games together. Kyrie Irving and Anthony Davis played 1 game together. And we're supposed to believe that the Trae Young, Anthony Davis thing is going to be great. I'm out on this Wizards thing. I'm out. I feel like what the Wizards did is get back on that hamster wheel of mediocrity with this trade deadline. What they did to get Trae Young and sit him out for the rest of the year and then add Anthony Davis and his contract to this organization and maybe extension for him, maybe an extension for Trae Young. I think they're back on this Bradley Beal, John Wall mediocrity thing. They haven't had a 50-win season since 1978, okay? They have been a losing team ever since the John Wall era. They haven't had a 500 season since. And they said, we want to get back on that carousel to nowhere. We want to get back to purgatory. And that's what this trade is. To me, it's they want to go and have Anthony Davis and Trae Young play like 30 games together next season. One of the most injury-riddled guys in the league in Anthony Davis, and expecting him to play more than 60 games. He's played more than 65 games once in the last 7 seasons. And I feel like we're seeing an NBA where all these teams, it just feels like we're talking a big game about how Kristaps Porzingis and Trae Young playing together, or Kyrie Irving and Anthony Davis and Cooper Flagg together. And they're all like rentals, Kev. It's a tough watch for these teams when, you know, you move off of Bradley Beal and Russell Westbrook, and then you're right back into purgatory with Trae Young and Anthony Davis. I get the price to get Anthony Davis was pretty small. Those 3 first-round picks that you traded the other way, those are really like basically second-round picks that Dallas got in that deal. I feel like they got back onto that hamster wheel way too short. And like, what are we doing? We're chasing 42 wins again next year?
I think you're hitting on an overall point here, Tom, about the nature of this deadline. I mean, for the Wizards, they get AD and Trae Young, and the sell is, well, they're not going to play much this year. It's about getting a pick still, and it's for next year. For the Jazz, it's, well, we get him. Hopefully we don't win too much. We'll, you know, we'll find ways for him to rest. We still care about our pick. And for the Bulls, you know, everything they did, it's in the name of, well, maybe we'll start losing some games. I hope that's what the Bulls are thinking about. But for so many of these teams, it's about ping pong balls, to your point, with some of these decisions that they made this trade deadline. It's about getting worse. As you said weeks ago with Trae Young going to the Wizards, it's not about this year. In part, they got him because they worried that McCollum and Kispert would help him too much. And their chase to get more ping pong balls. And with AD, he hasn't played 5 games in a row. I don't expect that to change. They're probably going to be extremely conservative with him. But I do feel a bit differently than you about what they get here, because the fact is they got Trae Young for an expiring and CJ and Corey Kispert, and they get Anthony Davis for Chris Middleton, 2 fake first-round draft picks, a number 30 pick this year from OKC, a 2030 Warriors pick that only conveys if it lands 21 to 30, and some mid-second-round draft picks. So they get Anthony Davis and Trae Young for scraps. And so these guys will be short-term veteran support pieces alongside a pretty promising young core. This young core is pretty good.
Keep adding to the young core.
Sun.
Like, keep getting bites at the apple. Like, trying to go get your franchise cornerstone rather than just the ceiling is a 500 team. It is. You could say that Trae Young and Anthony Davis were all-stars, but since when are we expecting these guys to be healthy enough to play considerably? And I just feel like they got too impatient with the process, quote unquote. And I don't know. I feel like Wizards fans right now are like, wait, we're doing this whole thing? We're trying to chase 42 wins again every year? That's what I'm saying. And look, they're not going to be good enough to move out of the top 5 this year. I'm not saying that. But I just feel like this is, they're right. The Wizards fans are right back into that 500 mediocrity conversation now with this.
At the end of the day, none of it matters unless they get a top pick this year. If they end up in the top 4, especially the top 3, and they're able to get Peterson, DiBonsa, or Boozer, that's what really changes the fortunes of this franchise. But Trae Young and AD are just short-term filler they got for cheap. That's the way I look at it for the Wizards side of things. And for the Pacers, getting Zubats, clearly just all about next year for Indiana, adding Zubats to this team. I love the fit with Zubats and Halliburton and that existing Indiana Pacers core. Zubats is not an up and down player. He's not a fast up and down center, but he's a quick decision maker. He's a guy who sets amazing screens for Tyrese Halliburton, rolls to the rim, elite finisher at the basket, whether he needs to take a dribble, a lob guy, great hands. He can make passes off the dribble as well on that short roll, and he's a good facilitator from the post and from the elbow. So I think for the Pacers, he adds a new dimension for them next year as they try to get back to being contenders. And the thing is, Tom, is they gave up a lot to get him. We talked earlier about the Clippers side of that, getting two first-round draft picks. They're giving up the pick in 2029 unprotected. They're giving up Benedict Mathurin and Isaiah Jackson. And then this year's pick they're giving up protected 1-4 or 10-30, which means if it lands in that 5-9 range, it goes to the Clippers. And so this is a risk for the Pacers to do this now. But at the same time, I do like the move overall, Tom, despite the risk and potentially losing that pick in the 5-9 range. That doesn't do as much for you if you're Indiana, if it's 5th or 7th. Obviously, that would be disappointing to lose that pick in the short term. But Zubats is a really good player, and you keep it if it's in the top 4. So I think overall, a win for Indiana. But boy, I'm hoping for lottery luck on them on draft night if I'm a Pacers fan. Really praying for that if I'm a Pacers fan.
Now, do you think that the Pacers are going to change their playing style with Tyrese Halliburton up and down the floor? It was awesome breakneck speed in the NBA Good finals question. With OKC and Indiana. I kind of feel like they might kind of shift down a little bit because of Tyrese Halliburton and coming back from that injury. I wouldn't expect to see them playing at that hyper pace that you saw that they were so good in the postseason with, up and down, transition, fast break basketball, where Tyrese Halliburton was the head of the snake. And him coming back from the injury, I wonder if they're going to be like downshifting and saying, let's play a little bit slower, more in the half court, and Zubats can really do that. Pascal, he's great in the open court, running those fast breaks and kicking out to shooters, or just Euro-stepping his way and spinning his way to the basket, a fantastic transition player. But to me, this signals that maybe Rick Carlisle and the Indiana Pacers are thinking they're going to downshift a little bit, and a guy like Zubats getting those offensive rebounds, second-chance opportunities, running the high pick and roll with Tyrese Halliburton, I think you're going to see a lot of different tempo and style of play with the Indiana Pacers with Tyrese Halliburton coming back from the Achilles tear.
I think that's a really good point. It's very possible they slow it down. That's a really, really good point with what could happen there. On the Wizards deal, we'd get to discuss the Mavericks side of that as well, Tom. They give up AD basically for fake picks and second rounders, and that comes 1 year after trading Luka to get AD. And obviously, this is horrific value. That goes without saying. This is horrific value. But I think overall for the Mavericks, This is a cleanse. That's what it is for Dallas. They now have a clean slate to build around with Cooper Flagg. The roster is worse now without AD. They also added Tyus Jones for what it's worth. They traded for him. But they have a worse roster. Hopefully they end up with better odds. That's part of the hope here. Get a high draft pick or high draft odds at the least and add around Cooper Flagg. But more than anything, this is a cleansing experience for the Mavericks. You fired Nico Harrison. He's gone. The reminder of what you gave Luka for in AD is gone. And now you can move forward with Cooper Flagg, who already looks like one of the 20 or 25 best players in the world right now, already at 19 years old with what he's doing. Now you can move forward with that guy as the face of your franchise moving forward. I would feel very clean. I'd feel like I just showered if I'm a Mavericks fan right now.
I think they should build a statue for Cooper Flagg right now, because without him, dude, how bad would it be in Dallas right now? Like, how bad would it be a Dallas fan if they didn't luck into Cooper Flagg? Like, the whole thing is wiped away. Luka Doncic, feels like getting basically zero top 200 players in the NBA and a bunch of second round picks is what they're going to amount to, basically. The 30th pick in the draft in this year's draft, is it like when you talk about the actual return of this trade, when you're getting Chris Middleton, when you're getting the Max Christie in the original deal, it's a bunch of maybe role players that you got for Luka Doncic and some late first, at best, first round picks. It's one of my biggest pet peeves is when people are like, they got three first rounders for Anthony Davis. What are you talking about? Not all first round picks are the same. They're not. And if you look at it, these picks are garbage first round picks. I think it was Nate Duncan who said, is that the worst first round pick package we've seen in NBA history? And I tend to agree, is that this package that you're seeing for Anthony Davis, who was traded for Luka Doncic, it's an atrocity. But when you look at the fact that they get to cleanse from the Luka Doncic trade, they still have Kyrie Irving potentially getting moved in the offseason when he comes back from his ACL tear. I really think that when you see, Yasi Gosselin saying generational fumble, again, that pick, the Warriors' first round pick in 2030, that was in the Jordan Poole Washington Wizards trade. It evaporates if it's a top 20 pick. The Warriors keep it, and there is no conveyance of a first-round pick the next year. It's gone. So you can end up with a second-round pick that turns into a second-round pick. At best, you're getting the 30th pick in this year's draft, which is basically a second-rounder. And then that Lakers first-round pick, that's the wild card that you're hoping that under new ownership, the Lakers and Luka Doncic, you talk about generational fumbles. The only way that that's going to be a really good pick is if it is a generational fumble that you have Luka Doncic in his prime in 2029 and you're still in the lottery. It's a horrible return, one of the worst trade packages we'll ever see for an all-star in his prime. But like you said, it's a cleanse around Cooper Flagg. And that's why I think they got to hang his jersey in the rafters. They got to build a statue, because what he is doing is keeping people in their seats, keeping people watching. And anything short of Cooper Flagg, this is an outright disaster. And they are picketing outside of Dallas, continuing to this day, if they didn't get Cooper Flagg.
100% true there, Tom. The Raptors missed out on AD. I'd say that's a good thing. They also didn't trade for Sabonis. Overall win for Toronto, I think, to not make a move there. We'll be right back. The other team, the bad team that made a move for a good player, the Utah Jazz. They added Jaren Jackson Jr., also got John Conchar, Vince Williams in the deal. They flipped Jock Landale to Atlanta, got Lonzo Ball from Cleveland. They cut him. And with all this, they gave up Walter Clayton and Taylor Hendricks, Kyle Anderson, George Niang, with three first-round draft picks. A 27 Lakers, most favorable from the Jazz, Cavs, or Wolves in 2027. In the Suns first in 31, in addition to two second round picks in the deal for the Utah Jazz to bring in Jaren Jackson Jr., pairing him with Lauri Markkanen and maybe Walker Kessler next year, and Keontae George taking a big leap. Ace Bailey coming along mid year for the Utah Jazz. Utah, they're tanking right now, but definitely looking to win starting next season, Tom. And I think for Utah, I'm pretty excited on paper with this group. They get a lot of length and versatility, a lineup of Walker Kessler and Lauri Markkanen and Jaren Jackson Jr. and Ace Bailey surrounding Keontae George. That could be a really fun, competitive team with size across positions from 2 through 5. I think it could be fun. I'm excited about the Jazz. I like this group, this configuration they got going on. And if they can get a top pick on top of this, woo, it could get really beautiful really quickly in Utah.
Yeah, shouts to Will Hardy. Thank you for giving him a guy like Jaren Jackson Jr., right? They had the worst defensive rating in each of the last three seasons. And not only that, they were the worst defensive ratings in NBA history. And now they finally get a guy who can defend. He's not the same defender as he was a couple years ago when he was Defensive Player of the Year, but he's a big four who can guard 1 through 5. And he got an ability to stop guys and create fast break opportunities for Keontae George and get out in transition. He can space. And next to Lauri Markkanen, he's got an inside-out game where you can kind of have a lot of fun with the X's and O's. And we know that Will Hardy is one of the best in the NBA on that end of the floor. But now is the question that I've been thinking about for the last 48 hours. Does Austin Ainge and Danny Ainge know this is top eight protected, this pick? Because I'm like, wait, you just traded for Jaren Jackson Jr., one of the better big men defenders in the league, and the big weakness of this team is defense, and they have a real shot at moving out of this pick when A.J. Dabonsa is in this draft. When you look at the numbers, they have a 96% chance of keeping this pick if they're in the number six slot, right, which they currently are. But then it moves to 86% chance of losing this pick when it's the number seven slot. At the number eight slot, things get really dicey. If they are moving to the number eight slot and a couple teams move ahead of them, and there's going to be some teams that are going to be losing a lot in this rest of the season, they're basically a coin flip to lose their draft pick to OKC if they are at the number eight slot. And then if they're at the number nine slot, it is a really low chance that they keep this pick in an A.J. Dabonsa draft. So it is a gamble. You are getting a really good player in Jaren Jackson Jr. that, to my knowledge, has no injury of note, had a turf toe injury in the offseason that made him a question mark for the training camp, but he's basically been 100% healthy this season. So to me, you can't even say this is A.D. and Trae Young all over again, that they're trading for a guy who's basically not going to play for the rest of the season. But in this loaded draft, maybe Will Hardy's like, we're going to wait a couple months before we install our new defensive schemes, Jaren Jackson. We're not really going to really defend at a high level, because you're looking at a situation. If they go 10-21 the rest of the year, and everybody else, Memphis, Dallas, and Milwaukee, if they go 6-26 or worse, they lose the pick. So if they go 10-21, the Jazz go 10-21 the rest of the year, and Memphis, Milwaukee, and Dallas go 6-27, 5-28, they're at the number nine slot. It's that easy for them to fall out of the top eight in this draft. And I can understand this move if you didn't have their first round pick, or they didn't have, if they're top one protected or top two protected, but top eight protected, really interesting move for the Utah Jazz to upgrade right now for a guy that, as far as I can tell, isn't injured and is going to be playing the rest of the season.
I can't wait to see how they figure it out, how to tank. I can't wait to see what they do. Lauri Markkanen out for 3 weeks, sickness. Jaren Jackson Jr., welcome to the locker room. Give Lauri a big hug. Shake his hand. That maybe pass it along to Jaren Jackson Jr. Just keep him off the court. But the fact is, Tom, the Grizzlies had no issues losing games with Jaren Jackson Jr. I'm not so sure the Utah Jazz will have many issues.
Wait, so what are we doing here then? We can't have it both ways, right? Like,
I know.
If he's not good enough to win in Memphis, then how is he good enough to win in Utah? So this is the weird thing about the NBA right now is we can say, hey, great move for Utah in getting Jaren Jackson Jr., but like they can still tank with him. So then how good is he? You're paying him $50 million next year.
How good is he? Well, he rebounds like a little guard, 4 or 5 rebounds per game. He's a solid, not great three-point shooter. He's just an excellent defensive player. And so I think for Utah, it's more about the full picture next year with another year of development for Ace Bailey and Keyonte George with what it could be. Walker Kessler coming back. This team's still too small. Nurkic is okay, but they need a true center for this to actually work, for it to look like a good long ball lineup with size across positions. But ultimately, Tom, to your point, is this an overpay, and is the timing bad for the Utah Jazz? It's not a certainty for Utah. For the Memphis side of things, I think it is a certainty. Getting back what they did, Clayton and Hendricks worth a shot. Maybe they work things out. 3 first round draft picks, not the highest value picks necessarily. Maybe that Suns 2031 ends up being really good, but ultimately for the Memphis Grizzlies, this is about tanking. It is about the 2026 NBA draft, but they didn't move off of Ja Morant. No offers were good enough on the table for them to move off Ja Morant. They are in a position now, though, still with Ja, where they're going to be trying to tank games. they're going to be trying to move up the lottery standings, move past the Utah Jazz, and increase their odds to get a top pick.
Yeah, I love this from Memphis. I think those three first-round picks were awesome that they got in this deal. You talk about the 2027 most favorable in that package with Utah potentially. That is a really good package of picks there, and way better. Blows it out of the water with what Anthony Davis. And, of course, 26-year-old Jaren Jackson Jr. is going to be more valuable on the marketplace than Anthony Davis at this point. But when we're talking about valuable first-round picks, that's an excellent haul for the Memphis Grizzlies. I have him as a winner in the trade deadline, even if they didn't move off of Ja Morant, because those first-round picks are really, really appetizing for the Memphis Grizzlies. That 2031, like you said, for the Phoenix Suns, unprotected. And then you get the most favorable of that Utah. I think it's Utah, Cleveland, and Minnesota. Right now, you're looking at a team, that Utah Jazz, that, yeah, you can talk about when those guys are together, they're really interesting going forward. But we're still talking about a team that won 17 games last year, and they're headed for another 20-ish win season this year. For them to not be in the lottery next year is not it's not a done deal. So when you see that the Memphis Grizzlies got the Utah's pick in 27, that's going to be a potential lottery pick. And you can say, hey, when those guys are healthy and they're big, and look at the leap that Keontae George made this season. But we see a lot of times in the NBA that it is not a linear development. And when you see the Cavs going from a 60-win team to barely a 45-win team this season, you can see that there's a lot of variability in the league. And I think Memphis did an excellent job here to get value from the Utah Jazz. They have a ton of first-round picks to pick from. And I think they got some pretty good ones here in the Phoenix pick in 2031. And, of course, that 2027 first-round pick that is the most favorable of Cleveland, Minnesota, and Utah. And then the 2027 Lakers pick, which is top four protected, as the icing on the top. So icing on the cake. So I think Memphis did really good work here on moving off of Jaren Jackson.
Should the Kings have traded for Ja, Tom? I mean, all the weeks ahead, the Kings were connected to them. The Heat were as well to Ja Morant. The Kings, from what I understand, they were offering Zach LaVine. They weren't willing to put a pick on the table. The Grizzlies wanted a pick. The Kings wanted a pick back from Memphis, as Sam Amick at The Athletic reported, and stand up just not trading for Ja Morant. All they did was trade Keon Ellis and Dario Saric and 2 second-rounders to go get DeAndre Hunter, and they don't trade Sabonis either. I thought they should have given up a pick to go get Ja Morant. I thought he was worthy of an upside swing for them, but I think their logic is probably, this is a guard-heavy draft. We might get our guard in the draft. It might be Darren Peterson. It might be Kingston Flemings. We might not even need Ja Morant, so we'll wait till the summer, similar to the logic of the Bucks waiting the deal Giannis for better offers. I think the Kings are waiting for the summer to figure out who they want their point guard to be. But I still think for one pick felt worth it to me to trade for Ja Morant. What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, maybe they're waiting to see where that pick lands. Like, if they get the number one overall pick,
yes,
depending on who they get, does Ja Morant fit next to A.J. DeBonsa or Cam Boozer? Darren Peterson is another question, although you've heard me on this program question Darren Peterson's ability to be a lead guard from a playmaking standpoint when you have a lower assist rate than Cam Boozer and A.J. DeBonsa and you're going to be a lead guard. Maybe you can play next to Ja Morant, even if he is a guard, Ja Morant's a much better playmaker than Darren Peterson is. So maybe if you draft Darren Peterson anyway, and you can still go get Ja Morant, because at this point, if you're Memphis, when you have Ja Morant's contract, which is $42 million next season and $45 million, I think the asking price is only going to get lower for moving off of Ja Morant. They don't want to have to play like the Washington Wizards and move up into a 500 round, being a 500 team with Ja Morant. I think they're going to want to move off of Ja and just turn the page and move on to the next phase of the organization. So I can understand if Sacramento was like, we have the leverage here. We're tanking. We're going to get a great pick next year. Let's reevaluate once we know what that pick is. And then we'll see what Memphis's asking price is. And maybe we're going to have more leverage than they think.
All right. There are a couple teams that made moves that they're hoping to contend for a championship, And they bolstered those chances a little bit, but these aren't big names that were moved. Starting with the Minnesota Timberwolves, they get Ayo Dosunmu plus Julian Phillips from the Chicago Bulls in return for Rob Dillingham, Leonard Miller. They also traded away Mike Conley. He could re-sign, and they gave up a pick swap. So they moved down with Detroit in the first round in this year's draft, getting Ayo Dosunmu, though, back from the Chicago Bulls, Tom. I like this addition for Minnesota, man. I think disappointment, I'm sure, not getting Kobe White if you're a Wolves fan, but then you get Dosunmu instead. 3-and-D guy, knockdown shooter, attacks closeouts, versatile defender. I think he's a great fit with Minnesota, and this isn't the biggest name, but he has an opportunity to be a really good playoff player for Minnesota.
Yeah, they miss They miss Nikhil Alexander-Walker.
Yes.
And this is a great
replaces him, essentially.
This great fill-in for him. And I think with Minnesota and in the postseason, you're not going to know who Ayo is right now if you're a regular casual NBA fan, but you're going to know in the postseason. He's going to be a difference maker for them, potentially winning them a couple playoff games alongside Jaden McDaniels and Anthony Edwards, Julius Randle, and Rudy Gobert. It does look like to me that for the Chicago Bulls side of things, they still are in this kind of weird zone where I don't know what they're trying to do. And it's great for Minnesota to come in over there and capitalize on that and say, hey, we're going to go get one of your best players for essentially nothing and be able to add four first-round picks, which on the equation, like four first-round picks is essentially one first-rounder if you just look at the math on it. But Rob Dillingham, Leonard Miller, I think it's worth it for them. And I expect him to be with them with the Timberwolves for a long time. He's a great scorer. As he transitioned from a defensive guy early in his career, he's shown a lot more and developed more on the offensive end. And so come playoff time, when you're on a team like a contender next to Anthony Edwards, you just do your best stuff. You don't have to show off and try to be a guy that's going to go play for a contract. I think if he's a winning player and doing the things that he can do at a high level, get downhill, shoot, and defend at a high level, he's going to get a big bag this summer and be able to get a contract from Minnesota, because this team, they need a replacement for Nikhil Alexander-Walker and what he did for that team in the postseason run last year. And I think they got it in Ayo Dosunmu.
Yeah, I like it for them. And then you mentioned the Bulls there in passing, Tom. They also traded Kobe White to the Charlotte Hornets, and they made a bunch of moves. In some ways successful, because they started the day, I think, with a 4 or 5 second-round draft picks. Now they're up to 15 draft picks on the team. They get, you know, Rob Dillingham, who didn't get a lot of opportunity in Minnesota, and Leonard Miller, who I liked. I'd look forward to seeing him get some chances with the Wolves. And they traded Vooch to Boston, which we'll talk about in a second. But for the Bulls side of things here, this feels to me like them trying to tank out of the play-in. I think that's what this is. They have 9 guards on the roster, Tom. They have 9 guards at this point on the team. I don't know how there's enough touches for Josh Giddey and Rob Dillingham and Trey Jones and Colin Sexton and Anfernee Simons. Like, all these guys are all on the same team now. They also signed Mac McClung to a 2-way contract, another guard. The roster doesn't make any sense, which is why I'm thinking they're trying to tank out of the play-in. Charlotte or Milwaukee has an opportunity to move up into that spot. The Bucks, if that Giannis comes back, and then the Charlotte Hornets getting Kobe White, adding him to already this stellar offense with LaMelo Ball and Con Knipple and Brandon Miller. That could be a high-powered offense with 4 guys who can create on the floor together. So Chicago, I'd imagine, is trying to tank out of the spot, and Charlotte could move on up.
Yeah, Charlotte, they have a shot at winning the Southeast Division. Look at this. Miami, they're 3.5 games back of Miami. They're 3 games back of Orlando. And then you see the Atlanta Hawks moving off of Kristaps Porzingis, moving off of Luke Kennard and Vete Krejci. You could see that the Hornets could end up with that 7 seed in the Eastern Conference and winning the division, which would be one of the greatest stories in the league. And they get a little bit of help with Kobe White and Tyus Jones. So this team, really exciting. And I think it would be smart if the Chicago Bulls were tanking their way out and trying to get into this top 4 of the NBA draft in a loaded draft. I just don't know if the Chicago Bulls do that. They've never really committed to the full tank, but from the Charlotte perspective, that Southeast division is there for the tanking, and it's a really fascinating look at that 7 through 10 where we always think it's going to be the same four teams in the East play-in invitational, and I think Charlotte's going to crash that party this year, and they might end up with something crazy like the 7th seed.
Yeah, they very well could. Very possible with the Charlotte Hornets. Nikola Vucevic was dealt by the Bulls with a second-round pick to the Boston Celtics for Anthony Simons and a better second-round draft pick. The Celtics also traded Xavier Tillman to the Hornets to get out from under the luxury tax. So Boston gets better, and they got under the luxury tax. Very successful trade deadline for Brad Stevens and that Celtics Celtics roster. Vooch in Boston, Tom. I love this fit, man. Like, add some spacing, add some shot creation, some playmaking from the center spot with what they lost from Kristaps Porzingis. Now you get Vooch in this scenario. Adds a new wrinkle to their center rotation. This team just keeps winning, man. Do you see they won the game last night with nobody playing pretty much against the Houston Rockets and Ron Harper Jr. starting, defending Kevin Durant? Adding Vooch to this roster, Bazula coach of the year might turn Vooch into have the best season of his career at age 37 or whatever, however old he is.
I love this move. I love the move for Vooch. He fills a need at that front court position. Anthony Simons, they had a great run here to basically move off of him when they already have Peyton Pritchard and Jaylen Brown. He was kind of this superfluous scorer off the bench where you don't need Anthony Simons. You don't need Nikola Vucevic. But I feel like in terms of fit, Vooch is going to be great for them. It's this one of the slowest teams in the NBA, the Boston Celtics. They play a lot in the half court, and he has this kind of three-point post-up game, this little jump hook in the lane that he can get to easy buckets in the postseason. Well, a lot of times, Boston had trouble scoring in the half court between Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown playing your turn, my turn, where sometimes you just needed someone to go get a bucket on the block, and Vooch does that just about as well as anybody in the league. And so when you're at Vooch, his age, his skill set, he's one of the best spacing big men we've seen in a long time. Top five all time from the center position, three-pointers made. Kristaps Porzingis is up there. Al Horford is up there. Both of those bigs are now gone from Boston, but you get the other guy in Vooch. I think the Boston fans are going to love Vooch. You know, with the way that he plays offensively and defensively, he's not a defensive player of the year candidate, but he doesn't need to be. They've got Kata for that, and I think you're going to love to see Vooch. If you're a Celtics fan, I think that you got to feel great about Moot. I know no one's going to be counting the luxury tax victories. You don't see a banner for getting out of the luxury tax, but that Brad Stevens, what he did this offseason until now to get out of the luxury tax and add to your team, I feel like is going to deserve. And I know you said Joe Mazzulla for coach of the year. I think Brad Stevens, what he's done with this roster in the midst of a Jason Tatum Achilles tear to get out of the tax and still be a 50-win team, outstanding work from the team.
We saw some shooters move. The Pistons added Kevin Huerter. They lost Jaden Ivey. They also got Dario Saric, and they're getting a pick swap with the Wolves to move up. Lakers got Luke Kennard for Gabe Vincent and a 2032 second-round draft pick. Your Blazers got Vit Krejci for Duop Reith and two second-round draft picks. What stands out to you from those three teams adding some shooters, Tom?
Low-key, I love what Detroit did. You go from 29th pick to maybe 22nd, 23rd. That's a big difference, like in terms of draft pick value. And you get Kevin Huerter, who's an underrated shooter this season, a down year from downtown. But you take him out of kind of this purgatory in Atlanta and Chicago and Sacramento the last few years, and you put him in a winning situation, you're going to get a lot of open shots there in Detroit. So I do think that this is a great move for Detroit, a great deadline for Detroit. Yeah, improve your draft value in this year with the Minnesota pick swap. And then I just think that this team needed shooters. Malik Beasley was second in the NBA in three-pointers made last season. And you get two guys in Duncan Robinson and Kevin Huerter who can knock down shots from Cade Cunningham. Asar Thompson, a great defensive demon out there. And you get guys who can hit open shots. That's going to be a great team. Think about all those offensive rebounds from Jalen Duren and Isaiah Stewart kicking out to Kevin Huerter in the corner. Historically, Huerter has been a great shooter, and I expect him to get back to his career levels there. And Vit Krejci, same thing. Vic Krejci, by the way, is fourth in the NBA in catch and shoot field goal percentage over the last three seasons, fourth, top five in 3-point field goal percentage over the last three seasons. Number one on that list was Luke Kennard and went to the Lakers. And Vic Krejci, I think they did a great job, the Blazers did. Dwight Reith, as good as he is as a spacing five, he had a foot surgery and he was out for the rest of the year. And so you weren't going to be able to get him as center depth behind Donovan Klingon. And they go out and they get a 6'8 shooter for the team, was 30th in field goal percentage from downtown. And you get one of the best catch and shoot guys who can do some stuff off the dribble, good passer in Vic Krejci. But I think both of those teams, Portland and Detroit, really needed to upgrade on their sharpshooting, and they got two really good guys in Vic Krejci and Kevin Huerter.
100% agree with you there, Tom. Both those teams needed shooting. They got it. For Detroit, I mean, the fact is that they're bottom 10 in the NBA in three-point attempts, or 28th in three-point attempts, and they're bottom 10 in three-point percentage. And so for the Pistons, adding any more shooting is helpful. And then for the Lakers, Gabe Vincent, just not a threat, not a good fit next to Luka. Luke Kennard, one of the best shooters in basketball, hitting 49.7% of his threes, not far off his career average of 44%. That team's going to stink defensively, though. They got to figure that out in the summer. I think overall, though, Tom, the one team we have not mentioned yet, we mentioned the OKC side of this trade, getting Jared McCain as a good ball handler for them, especially with SGA out. The next few weeks, McCain might get an opportunity in OKC. We did not mention the Philadelphia 76ers side of this, Tom. The Sixers, to me, are the biggest loser of the trade deadline. Philadelphia giving up Jared McCain, a guy who looked like the rookie of the year a year ago, prior to his injury, looked more like himself these past few weeks after a slow start to the year, and you give him up to duck the luxury tax for a mid-first-round draft pick from the Rockets this year, three second-round draft picks that aren't even that good. One of those seconds is from Oklahoma City all the way in 2028, a 2027 second-round pick, and another one from the Bucks in 2028. You get these middling picks for Jared McCain, one of your most promising young players, to duck the tax? Just a joke. If I'm a Sixers fan, I'm infuriated, Tom. I'm pissed off about this situation where you enter the year with VJ Edgecombe and Tyrese Maxey and Jared McCain, these good young players, and you deal one of them to cut cost? It's a joke. Just days after Joel Embiid, in front of the media, said, "I hope we don't duck the tax." And that's exactly what they did. In part because they got lucky with the Paul George 25-game suspension, lowering their luxury tax bill because of the $11, $12 million he's going to lose. The Sixers, losers this trade deadline. It's just so disappointing for Philadelphia, man.
I wonder if they were ramping up for a Giannis trade and it didn't work out. I bet that Daryl Morey
wanted. I don't think so. I think they're just cheap, and that's it.
I hope you're wrong, man. I hope they wouldn't sell low on Jared McCain after he was a rookie of the year candidate last year. One of the great stories last year before the meniscus injury, got a chance to see him when he was in Charlotte a couple weeks ago. And look, this is bad business if you're Daryl Morey and the Philadelphia 76ers. Maybe you got a decree from up on high. Josh Harris said, get out of the luxury tax. We need to get out of I'm not going to be paying the luxury tax for this team. But I hope this, the glass half full here is that maybe Jared McCain was never the same. They had asymmetric information than what OKC gets. And they're saying, we know what his knee looks like, and we don't have a good feeling about him projecting him long term. I'm with you. I think it's a big L for the Philadelphia 76ers, but glass half full is that they held on to VJ Edgecombe in trade talks with Giannis Antetokounmpo. If that ever came to be, that the Giannis sweepstakes, that the Philadelphia 76ers were in it and they were trying to ramp up for first-round picks, second-round picks, draft capital to send over to get Giannis Antetokounmpo, and they weren't able to get that deal, maybe that happened, maybe that didn't. But outside of that, if this really is just ducking the tax, what are we doing? Jared McCain was one of the best stories in the league last year, and you're ducking the tax with the guy who's in his second year in the league, who is one of the bright spots of this young core. If it is truly a ducking tax situation, by luck of this The 25 game, like you said, the 25 game suspension from Paul George, it wipes off $11 million off his salary and got them close enough to the luxury tax line that they were able to make this move. I just hate that it came at the expense of Jared McCain. And Oklahoma City, they do it again, man. They do it again. Isaiah Hartenstein, they got him for basically nothing because the New York Knicks couldn't go over the cap to go retain this guy. And then it falls into their lap. Then they go out and they get Alex Caruso, the best perimeter defender in the league. The rich get richer here with Jared McCain coming over to the Oklahoma City Thunder, a guy that they're going to need. They need a guy who can get buckets at a drop of a hat, and he's one of the best young scorers last year in the rookie class, if not the best rookie class last year, scoring in the rookie class. And OKC does it again. I mean, Philly, it just like feels like this was a huge mistake to get off of Jared McCain. I just wonder they didn't feel good about his health going forward. Otherwise, if this is a pure tax move, I'd be pissed if I'm Philly.
Well, they deal McCain, they deal Gordon to Memphis into a traded exception. They're saving money, being cheap, even though the window is shutting fast and perhaps has already shut. And OKC keeps winning. You know, they get McCain, the Jazz get better, increases their odds potentially of getting that pick. The Clippers get worse. Maybe that ends up in the lottery as well, Tom. This, I don't think we missed anything. Maybe we missed a little deal. There might have been a couple things we might have missed. Hunter Tyson went to the Nets. We missed that one. not. I don't think we missed anything. I think we hit it all. I think we got it all, Tom. I think we hit everything. This was a hell of a lot of fun, Tom. What a weird trade deadline. I just can't get over some of these bad teams making additions. Trace Jackson Davis to Toronto. That's another one we missed that just popped into my head. But I think we hit it all, Tom. Tom, thank you so much for joining sure me today, did. Man. Thank you.
No, cheers, and appreciate y'all for joining us on the live show. We do this every Thursday, so this is not just a trade deadline special. We do this every Thursday, typically around, 11:30 Eastern time. We go live every week, every Thursday, so stay tuned. If this is the first time you've joined us on the Trade Deadline Show, we do this every week here at the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel. Go hit that subscribe button and go check out the big number. We do this every Wednesday with Dan Devine here at Yahoo, and go check out the Dunker Spot. I'm going to keep drinking some water here because we've been talking for almost 2 hours straight here, and it's been a great deadline, but I need to hydrate here.
Yeah, Tom needs to hydrate. He needs to go eat. It needs to go eat. Tom, thank you for joining me, and thank you, everybody, in the live chat. Like Tom said, please subscribe to Yahoo NBA if you're not done so already. Appreciate you, everybody who joined. Claytron, thank you. Appreciate it. Bode, Terry, everybody in the chat, thank you. Give us a like if you have not done so already, and hit that subscribe button. Thank you to Emmy and the whole team for producing today's episode. Thank you to Father John listening to the music. Thanks to Tom for joining me. And thanks to you for watching. We'll be back again on Monday. Have a good one.